You're listening to a podcast from thebodypro.com. The following podcast was recorded at the 14th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections, also known as CROI 2007. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, please visit us online at thebodypro.com.
I'm Miles Helfand, and I'm here at CROI 2007 with Julie Davids, the Executive Director of the Community HIV-AIDS Mobilization Project, or CHAMP, HIV advocacy group in the United States. We're talking about the state of the U.S. HIV epidemic and HIV prevention and advocacy. Dr. Harold Jaffe, who's the former director of the U.S. National Center for HIV, STD, and Tuberculosis Prevention in the United States, he gave a talk earlier this morning in which he talked about basically the current state of the epidemic and what can be done to curb the rising rates of HIV. He talked about a lot of things, what I'd like to talk to you about is his take on advocacy and how it has evolved over the years. What was your take on what he said?
Well, I'm glad to see that Harold was speaking out as an advocate himself, making it very clear that there's a discrepancy between the U.S. government funding abstinence only until marriage, where there's evidence showing it doesn't work, versus spending no money on needle exchange, where there's substantive evidence that it does. I feel like it was a good role to see him shifting into, because I know he was constrained in what he could say as a longtime CDC staff person. However, I do have to take issue with some of the things he said towards the end of his remark about the lack of leadership and his impression of kind of a gap between different generations of the AIDS movement. Clearly, during the times of the prominence of the voices of both Larry Kramer and Randy Schiltz, who were the two people whose pictures he put up, and now, there's major differences in many things, not least of which is the dramatic visible severity of the AIDS epidemic at a time when there was no treatment versus now where there is treatment, but also U.S. society. For example, I think we need to recognize, if you go back and you look at the massive ACT UP demonstrations, storm the NIH, taking over the FDA, you literally couldn't even do that now because of Homeland Security. Access to public officials, access to public buildings even has been so restricted that I think we need to examine not just the differences in the AIDS movement, but the society we live in, where there's so many curbs on the ability of people to speak out, that we even censor ourselves before we are able to figure out what we can do. Secondly, we've gone from a time where there was no treatment and no services to a time where there is treatment and services. Many people who were advocates and still are in their own way are very busy trying to do so much with so little in a time where the, as he has said, the number of people with HIV in the U.S. continues to rise and funding has not kept a pace. So people who may have been in the streets fighting for treatment are now literally at their computer and phones fighting for treatment for hours with healthcare providers or with drug company patient assistance programs. By characterizing some sort of former era where there was ostensibly activism for prevention that has now shifted into treatment access, I think is pretty inaccurate. I don't think we've ever had enough advocacy for prevention. And as the director of an organization that's building a prevention activist movement in the United States, we have some strong history that we are in the legacy of, for example, people starting their own needle exchanges in the absence of federal and most times city or state funding. But we haven't had the widespread prevention activism in the streets that we had for treatment, precisely because when prevention works, nothing happens. No one says, oh boy, today I didn't get infected with HIV in the way they said, wow, today, for the first time, I'm on combination therapy that actually is probably going to help me get my health back in that striking way that happened in the mid-90s. So I think in a way we're kind of comparing apples to oranges. And then lastly, I'll say that I just found it really strange that at the end of his presentation, Dr. Jaffe chose to put up a picture of Nelson Mandela saying, I could only find a picture of an African leader. I couldn't find, I'm paraphrasing, but I couldn't find an African-American leader to put up here. Of course, Nelson Mandela has done amazing things, but right here in Los Angeles, look at what Phil Wilson has done with the Black AIDS Institute and all the networks he's a part of to build a base of support in the African-American community, hold the media accountable, and develop alternative media for strong HIV/AIDS advocacy. Look at the National Black Gay Men's Advocacy Coalition, which has recently started with a very strong policy platform to look at the 46% crisis of infection in black gay men and other black men who have sex with men. Look around us. We just had a training 2 days ago, all weekend, we had a training with 90 people learning to be prevention research advocates from about 20 different states in this country who are saying, we're here, we're ready. We're ready to be that movement. I think we don't do justice to leaders who are emerging to say there are no leaders. And we don't do justice to our own movements, as different as they may look now, by comparing them to a time when the epidemic was very different, society was very different, economics were very different, and trying to put this kind of stereotype on top of the activism of today. Sure, we need more, and that's why CHAMP's around, and us and others we work with are fighting to make sure that people are able to be as powerful as they need to be to fight for changes, and we're fighting for prevention justice, just HIV prevention policies. But just because it's not easy, and just because it's not as strong as it needs to be, doesn't mean that people aren't doing the right thing. And I think that, for example, there's black gay men who have been very articulate in saying, our advocacy may not look like how you think it should look like. It may not be in this model of what Larry Kramer thinks should be done, but we need to invent this for ourselves. We need to do that for ourselves. And we need to listen to what they are saying, and if we are not black gay men, for example, say, how may I assist? Not, oh, you're doing it all wrong. I'm not saying that Dr. Jaffe said that, of course, but I do think people get, there's a lot of pressure on people who are trying to be in a new movement, who are trying to develop leadership, and it is not going to be like 1985. It is not going to be like 1987. It's not going to be like 1992, you know? It's never going to be like it was before Clinton got elected, for example, when things started to shift, and it's not going to be like it was in 1996 and so when people started getting combination therapy. And I think what we need to do is build alliances between activists in the U.S. and worldwide rather than being pitted against each other.
Well, Dr. Jaffe almost seemed to suggest, I mean, by putting up those pictures of, like you said, of Mandela and Larry Kramer earlier, that this was, that what it kind of came down to was a personality issue, that there weren't any people, like actual individual human beings who could act not just as advocates in and of their own right, but as individuals who can galvanize by force of their charisma, by force of their personality. He did use Magic Johnson as his chosen example for a person who might be able to be that kind of leader. But he seemed to imply that there wasn't, the problem with advocacy today may be that there isn't that person around which everybody can rally.
Maybe we're being unduly influenced by having the retrovirus conference in LA the same week as the Oscars, but I don't feel that the cult of personality has necessarily always been that helpful in HIV/AIDS advocacy. I mean, it's as if we say, like, there's really no one doing anything in research right now. Where's the David Ho? How come no one's been on the cover of Time magazine? You know, I think in some ways it's a spurious comparison. Magic Johnson's a celebrity, and people have worked with him, I think, to the extent possible to try to move him to where he can be in terms of advocacy, and I don't know how much further it's going to go. I don't think that telling people, you people need a leader, is really the way that we go about movement building that's a movement of the people. I think we need to recognize that what was fought for and won in HIV/AIDS advocacy was not fought for and won by Larry Kramer. It was fought for and won by tens of thousands of people who knew that they were in the last weeks, days, or months of their lives, who gathered together to go to the NIH and said, you need to study the opportunistic infections that are killing me, not just AZT. And yes, they may have heard about that from Larry Kramer. What's more likely is they heard that from the hundreds of organizers who came to ACT UP New York. It's not just about one person. It's never been about one person. If we leave it at the level of celebritization, it is very thin indeed. If we leave it at the level of people who have access to top-line media, we are inherently biasing against the majority of people who are living with or vulnerable to HIV/AIDS in this country who cannot access the media. Okay? And so I think building a movement is the work that happens often outside of the eyes of the camera. And that's work that's happening all over this country that goes unrecognized and that we need to be here to support. So I hear what Harold is saying. I think it's a shame that he has not had the opportunity to meet the people that I have the privilege of working with, you know, who are probably never going to be on the cover of Time magazine, or they're not going to be featured on Entertainment Tonight, but yet and still, they are the leading force of justice in HIV/AIDS. That is going to say, for example, we need to reform sentencing in the United States, so less folks are getting locked up. So we're not dismantling their neighborhoods. So whole families and communities are vulnerable to HIV because of the different things that happen when you dismantle a community by incarcerating a quarter of the men in that neighborhood. Okay? That's the kind of analysis, that's the kind of organizing that we need to do. And you know what? It's not going to get that much coverage because the revolution will not be televised. But that doesn't mean that the revolution can't happen in HIV/AIDS.
Julie Davids, Executive Director of CHAMP, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from thebodypro.com. For more podcasts and full coverage of major HIV medical conferences, please visit us online at thebodypro.com.